Welcome to Politicus, the only podcast that discusses politics and public service from the Portuguese-American perspective. Here, we discuss everything from federal policy, local issues, and U.S.-Portugal relations with the goal of driving more discussion and awareness of the issues affecting our nation, our community, and what we as Portuguese-Americans can do about it. And now, Politicus. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Politicus. My name is Angela Simoes, and I'm here with my most esteemed co-host, Dinesh Borges. How are you, Senhor Dinesh?
Oh, Senhora Angela, I'm fine. How are you doing? The most awesome ever emeritus of the chair of caucus.
Yeah, you know, if I'm ever feeling bad about myself, I'm just going to go back and listen to these podcasts and just the intros.
Just a bit, but it is. You are the best emeritus ever.
Oh, thank you.
And we've had some good ones,
We have. So today's guest is Frank Ferreira, who is one of the newest conselhos de comunidades for the DC area, the Washington DC area. And he's also founder and CEO of Ferreira International, which is a consulting firm. Welcome, Frank.
Hi, good afternoon. Glad to be here with both of you guys, very distinguished hosts.
Thank you. See, he's catching on, Dinesh. He caught on real quick.
I know. Frank does that.
Hey, I wanted to make sure you listened to this one over and over again.
So today we're talking about the importance of voting, frankly. It's a really great topic. It's one that I don't think can ever be hashed out enough, because despite how often we talk about it, there are still people out there that don't vote. And we're talking about it both in the U.S. elections as well as the Portuguese elections. Portuguese elections for us here in the States and the diaspora is a little more complicated. So, Frank, where would you like to go first?
Sure. So, well, my preference would be to be in Lisbon right now, having a nice drink along the water. Yeah. But being that we can't do that, here in lovely Virginia today, I wanted to, if I could, Angela, just say another short introduction and then talk about the Portuguese elections and then move on to the U.S. elections. And sure. with both elections, I just wanted to obviously underscore some of the importance of both of these elections and of the role of the Portuguese American and Portuguese here in the United States.
Yeah, go for it.
Super. Thank you very much. So again, thank you very much for the invitation. I think that this format is long overdue, so I congratulate Palkus and congratulate both of you for your role in getting this platform onto the internet. I think it's a great way for us to unite the community. So I am delighted to have this opportunity to be talking to both of you. So just a little background. Yes, late last November, I was truly honored to be elected to the position of counselor for the Council of the Portuguese Communities. Myself, along with the alternate Irina Ramos, are immensely delighted to be able to represent and honored to represent the Washington, D.C. consular area, which, as you folks know, stretches mm-hmm. from the D.C. area down to the great state of Texas. But somehow we'll get this done. So my message to the Portuguese community is now more than ever, they need to be engaged in politics and the electoral politics, both here in the United States and in Portugal. We are a significant number of the voting population and quite a large number that exercise our right to vote. So I think it only behooves us to engage on both sides of the Atlantic. Mm-hmm. So let me start with the Portuguese elections, if I can. And again, kudos to you guys. And again, Angela, you did not pay me to say this, but you guys did a fantastic job with the last decennial census, the 2020 census.
Thank you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, absolutely. It was a awesome task, and you guys came out with some very interesting numbers. And I am one of your heavy consumers of the products you put out. I've read those reports inside and out, because I think that's the kind of information that we needed to have in order to have a discussion about politics with both leaders here in the United States and the folks back in Lisbon. So mm-hmm. 1.4 million of us somehow are associated, affiliated, or proud to be Portuguese Americans. That's fantastic. in terms of the electorate. I don't know what that turns out to be. But even if half of that number voted, I think we could make a significant difference in elections, more so that recent elections have been fairly close. So we might not be able to carry the vote by ourselves, but certainly if it's a tight election, I think we will have a place at the table, like they just say. The same goes for Portuguese electorate, right? So here in the United States, we're not the biggest, but there are 63,000 that are registered to vote. And this was as of the last presidential race back in 21. So it's a pretty good number. It's a sizable number, but we could do more. We could do more. We could do better. And one of the sad things is that our abstention rates when it comes to voting, both on the American side and Portuguese side, it's rather low. So I think we have a lot of work to do here. So again, one more reason why this platform is important for us to talk about these issues. So,
yes. Can I just ask you, one quick question about the Portuguese electorate. So as you said, there's about 63,000. One of the issues that has happened, and I don't know if you saw a report just recently, we tackled this yesterday, actually, on the Portuguese session that we do, Palcas PBBI, which is called As Nossas Vozes. And that is, there was just a recent report by RTPI that there were literally thousands and probably in the hundreds of thousands that in the last few years redid their ID card and their citizenship papers as far as their Portuguese citizens, obviously, or else they can't vote in Portugal. But redid their ID card or got a new ID card because they just turned citizens. And also in their Portuguese passports. When they did that, the consulates, the various employees did not check in the box that they could vote. And so we, according to the RTPI report, have literally thousands in the United States, and I don't know how many. The report was not clear; they did not know. This happened actually to the person we were talking to on the As Nossas Vozes podcast or webinar, which was Paulo Pereira. He himself mentioned four folks that he knows from Mineola that did it last year in Portugal, and two of them the employee did it; the other two, the employee forgot to do it. So I think that the Conselho das Comunidades Portuguesas, although hasn't taken their seat yet, that should be something that should be totally called for and called for. And I'm it's anecdotal, but I'm one of those. I have voted in Portuguese elections for the last 20 years. I was a member of the Conselho das Comunidades Portuguesas in the early 2000s for 6 years. And so I've been voting in Portuguese elections for way over 20 years, almost 30. And this last time when I did my card, and I always was asked, to be registered to vote, it wasn't done. So first of all, is this something that you as a counselor are willing to tackle? Because there's a lot of faults here that do not lie on the community for not voting, lies on Portugal for not doing its job.
Sure. That's a fantastic point. First of all, I watched you last night and I enjoyed the conversation. So again, thanks to the magic of the internet, we're now able to connect from different parts of the country. Yes, this is one of my top priorities as a counselor. It is to change the trend. The trend actually goes both ways, right? There's a role for the individual voter to educate herself and himself on the Portuguese process, which is a little bit different from ours, to say the least. And it's a little bit involved if you're not used to it. That's number one. Number two is that, yes, the officials also need to play a bigger role in elections. One of the things I've been talking about lately is I've been asking the political parties to take a more active role in campaigning. If it's going to be online for now because it's less expensive, great. But you know what, Dennis? I would love to see candidates come and ask for my vote here in the United States. So we could hope, and eventually we'll get there. As you may know, one of my priorities has been increasing access to the ballot. I think that's fundamental. In Portugal this year, we're celebrating 50 years of the Carnation Revolution. That's the revolution that gave us the Constitution of April 1975. In that Constitution, we were given the the privilege, the right as a citizen to vote. It is our right. It is something that's not given to us by the government. It's given to us by the Constitution. So I've been a big proponent of online voting. Yes, there are pluses, there are minuses. But you know what, Dennis and Angela? We do everything online now. We're having this conversation. We interview for jobs. We do online banking. Portugal, by the way, has just switched to using the internet to register. They have a new app where you're able to register all your important documents, your driver's license, your medical record. So why not? Why can't we use the internet to vote? Again, it'll spare the Portuguese government a lot of expense, because the access will be there. It'll be easy for just about anyone who's eligible to vote. So I've been pushing really hard on that point. I do want to get to the point where we get to vote online. And by the way, not just certain elections, right? So as both of you know, mm-hmm. some elections, and by the way, Dennis, I've been a victim of the Portuguese electoral system as well. And this is why I'm pushing for reforms. One year I was sent a ballot. I filled it out, sent it back to Portugal. It was an issue of postage. That was a problem worldwide, right? That was number one. And next year, I expressed my preference of voting in a certain election. I went to vote. I couldn't get into the embassy. That was a problem. Again, and I'm not blaming anybody, right? I think there's room for us to grow here. And I have to make another observation too. Although I've been a critic of this process and been asking for these things, or as a deputy in Lisbon about a year ago told me, we're very demanding nowadays. No, we're just very educated nowadays, right? And we know what our rights are, and we know how to access information. So we're not being demanding of anything that's unnatural, right? We're just demanding of our rights as Portuguese citizens. So one of the things that we've been trying to do is to push for this and make this part of electoral reforms. And there is another part of the electoral reforms that I'd like to talk to, if I may. But I think I've answered your question. If not, let me know.
No, you've answered my question. And you may hit this next, but the second part of the follow-up was, you answered very well, and I appreciate that, was the issue of, as you said, you know, there are needs for reforms. The need is there at various levels, and you mentioned them quite eloquently. However, there's another issue that I'd like you to address, which is, I think, the CCP could address, and I'll just refer to the CCP now from now on instead of saying Conselho das Comunidades Portuguesas. It's easier to say CCP, which is something that's been trying to be addressed for way too long. And that is, I believe, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it, because I've been following this process also for, you know, about 28 to 30 years since the Conselho began. And that is this Conselho, because there was another one before that, this elected version. And that is the issue of the political parties when it comes to the entities that the candidates that are running. The so-called cabeças de lista, or that is the leader, the one person that has a chance to get in there, if his or her party is the one most voted, and that would be either a PSD or a PS, two of us for what is known the region outside of Europe, which is the remainder of the whole entire world that elects two, as you know, and our listeners, I do know that as well, and I know Angela knows that as well. And so these two figures are never immigrants. This year, it's José Cesário, who I have deep respect and friendship for. Politically, we are at odds, but we're very good friends. And the other one is Augusto Santos Silva, who knows about as much about the communities as I know about Armenia. And I think I actually know probably a bit more. But anyway, both of these folks have never been immigrants. Why can't the major political parties? But if we look, it's not just the two major political parties. All the way from the right Chega, ultra-right wing Chega, to the ultra-left PCP, there none of them have an immigrant as the leader of the leading candidate that might have a chance to be elected. Is this something that you think CCP can also address and be really upfront with it?
Dennis, I think you were about to say be frank, so I'll be frank. I am frank. So, which takes me to my second issue, right? I have, I know my history quite well, right? So when the colonists here in the United States revolted against Mother England, the cry, the rallying cry was no taxation without representation, right? So our great folks in Portugal have found a way to somehow find us any time and every time they need us to pay taxes in Portugal, mm-hmm. to pay for services. They know how to reach us, right? They even mm-hmm. give you a card and you could do all that online. But here's the issue, and this is why we get ignored by the parties, Dennis. It's numbers, right? And I was never good at numbers in school, but these numbers are really easy to follow, right? So the Portuguese parliament right now consists of 230 deputies. Out of those 230 deputies, the majority of them are either in Lisbon. They have 48 deputies in the National Assembly. And in Porto, they have 40 deputies in the National Assembly. For our circle, right, which you so rightfully call the Fora da Europa, which is kind of a weird name, but anyway, that's where we belong. It's us and the rest of the world, right? The United States, Canada, and the rest of the world. And obviously, there's the European circle, too. But let's talk about our circle. So in our circle, we get to be represented by two deputies. Now, Dennis, again, I told you, I'm not good at math, but, you know, there's this neat chart. And the other thing, by the way, the Portuguese government, by putting things online, are now giving us ammunition to use against them as well, right? One of them is, and I'm looking at this, and I'll gladly share this with Palkas, and because I think you guys will have an interest in this. There's a breakdown of the members of parliament, right? So the way it turns out to be, and there's a great imbalance here. Tell me if this makes any sense. So if we look at the total number of voters that compose the electoral circle of Europe, it's about just under a million, 937,000, right? Divided by two, that's about 468,000 constituents that each deputy gets to represent. If you're a deputy in Lisbon, your constituency is only 40,000 votes that you need or to get elected. So do you see that vast disparity there? And if we look at the Fora da Europa, so there's about 609,000 of us, right? If you divide that by two deputies, that's 304,000 constituents. How do two deputies get to travel the whole world and represent us? When was the last time you saw your deputy? I can't remember the last time I saw it, but okay, that's the downside of this. So yes, I do want to tackle this issue of proportional representation. I believe that the time has come that for us abroad, and again, the Constitution makes no differentiation between a Portuguese in Portugal, including the autonomous regions, and abroad. So we are equal according to the Constitution, but yet the numbers don't reflect that. We don't have equal access to the ballot. We don't have equal or proportional representation. So there's a major problem here. But again, the reason I believe, and from what I've read, that there's been hesitation here is because of the ideology of our electorate, right? There's hesitation. So for instance, our good friends in the PS were just in power for the last 8 years. They had a supermajority in the parliament. They went as far as introducing legislation to do a pilot for online voting. Poof, it all disappeared, right? All of this went nowhere. They were given these numbers. They never paid attention to us. Do you know why they don't pay attention to us, Dennis? They don't need us. The numbers are sufficient in Portugal for these deputies to continue to be elected over and over. And to your point about Cabeça da Lista, which drives me absolutely nuts, okay? But again, I understand it. From a practical perspective, this is the person who obviously is selected for that role because the belief is that that person will attract the greatest number of votes, right? And then you have an alternate just in case if the main candidate cannot fulfill his or her term, which is fine. It's great. But again, it's the way that it's done. For instance, and maybe this will be news, maybe it's not news. So after being so excited and thrilled about being elected to the Council of the Communities, I decided to throw my hat in the ring, as we say here, for a deputy position for exactly the Fora da Europa capacity. And as it turns out, right? I filled out the paperwork. And again, it's a closed system. You have to be affiliated with a party. If you're not affiliated with the party, it is extremely difficult for you. And by the way, it's got to be a recognized party, right? It's extremely difficult for you to get on the ballot. And again, just think about it too, right? If we take this scenario, if I were to be on the list, right, I would be beholden to all these electorates throughout the planet. I would need the resources from a party to back me up to be able to get my message out, which by the way, right? From all the griping that we've done about not having enough access, not having enough representatives, I got to give it to the folks. I'm starting to see an evolution, and it's going in the right way, I believe. The major parties are now using the internet, and they are customizing their messages for different parts of the world, for different electorate, which I think is fantastic, right? But again, and not to fault the and not to take sides, I will use the PS as an example. They actually put out a 9-point plan. Dennis, I looked at that plan and I laughed. I said, you know, these are all bromides. These are all platitudes. Where does it say that you're going to give me greater access to the ballot? Where is it? But where does it say that you're going to give me greater representation? You know, that's what power is all about. The rest, it's all fluff. So while I appreciate the information, I appreciate the effort, and by the way, this was on Instagram, really nicely well done. It looks beautiful, but it doesn't mean anything, or at least to me, it doesn't mean anything, because at the end of the day, again, it's all these technical issues that we've been discussing that matter the most. But again, Angela and Dennis, and this is why this is so important that I join you today. We need leaders like you, people in the community that have credibility to talk about the importance of the vote, right? A lot of us here in the United States are saying, oh, you know, that's Portugal. Maybe I'll go back. Maybe I won't. But you know what? Maybe you will, because a lot of us are going back, right? So you need to worry about your pension. You need to worry about taxes. You need to worry about education for your children. And yet, right, we have no clout. We have no say. And we're beholden to folks that don't know our community, as you so well put, Dennis, a few minutes ago too, right? We're a big place. The United States is huge. The rest of the world is huge. And for us to have the kind of relationship that I have with my congressman here or my senator here, I can't do that in Portugal. But anyway, we're getting there. Mm-hmm. So the big election that's coming up now is March 9th. That's the legislative election for the deputies in Portugal. And as you both of you know, and as the listeners will know that have been following this in Portugal, the last government, I think it was the 23rd, if I'm not mistaken, the socialists had to, the government fell, right? It fell. And we now have an acting government, and the president has scheduled these elections for March. So March 9th is our first opportunity.
It's March 10th. Just a quick.
I'm sorry.
March 10th, Frank.
Oh, forgive me, March 10th.
One day off, no big deal.
Yeah, I like early voting. we can't even, well, yeah, we can. We could get that, but it depends on the election. So March 10th, right? There's an opportunity for us to show that we could make a difference, but we have to go and vote, right? So here's, for this particular election, some elections you could request a ballot in the mail, right? As for this election, that's one option. Or two, you could go, you had to let the embassy know that you prefer to come and vote in person at the embassy, which for us is problematic because, again, if I'm living in Texas, in Dallas, Texas, what's my incentive to go all the way up to Washington, D.C., besides maybe go watch the cherry blossoms, right? If they're already starting to bloom, I don't even know. But again, there's an expense. It's a hassle. It's not the best of the world that we should have. Again, this is why online voting would take away that problem, right? And then that would also take away from the argument that the Portuguese officials will give you. They'll say, look at your abstinence. Look at the abstention numbers. It's pathetic. And you know what? They're right. We don't vote. But then again, we need to understand, right? We need to have information. We need to be aware of what's going on, and we need to engage, because Portugal as a democracy, just like here in the United States, it relies on fresh blood from the electorate, right? If we don't participate in the system, that, you know, we don't have a voice. We don't have a voice. So if I may, so that's the big election coming up. And then obviously there's the election on June 9th for the European Parliament. Angela, Dennis, again, I don't know any of the folks that are running for the European Parliament. I really don't. I don't even know if they'll reach out to me, if they even need my vote. But anyway, it's a major election. So something to be aware of. So I think I will leave it here. Maybe just try to real quickly summarize what the issues are again, right? So no more lost ballots, no more undeliverable ballots. We need greater access to the ballots, right? Because if we don't have access to the ballot, by the way, which I keep reminding the officials in Portugal, it is unconstitutional. It is disenfranchisement, which is something we're very familiar with here in the United States, right? And not only that, right? Here in the United States, we have one constitution. In Portugal, if you, like I happen to have now dual citizenship, I have the benefits of two constitutions, the Portuguese constitution and the EU constitution. All of these issues I just raised are violations of those constitutions, right? So again, what's the solution? You know, continue with mailing out ballots. That's fine. It works for a lot of us. It doesn't work for some of us. You have to maintain your records up to date, right? So you got to do that in person. Right. For me, Washington, D.C. is 20 minutes away. It's a metro ride. It's no big deal. Right. I could go and do that. I like going there. I like to get to know the folks that work for us at the embassy, which, by the way, are quite helpful. I have to tell you, online is my dream. Online is the dream come true. Right. That will bring all of us into the process. And in doing so, right, that's what 50 years of celebrating the Carnation Revolution should be about, right? It's a stronger, more robust democracy. So that's my points on the Portuguese elections. Unless if you have any questions, I wanted to move on to the U.S. elections.
Well, if I'll just offer my perspective as a third generation Portuguese American, so born, you know, three generations here in the U.S., and only recently obtained my Portuguese citizenship. And yeah, congratulations. Took a while, but I'm finally part of the group. And let me just say, I don't know that we're going to get to the U.S. elections in this conversation, because we're already, 30 minutes in, and we usually try to keep these to 30 minutes. But I do think it's important to have the perspective of someone like myself, because it's a little bit more complicated. So when I will fully admit, I don't follow Portuguese politics as often as maybe I should, but you know, the things that matter most to me are the services that are provided to the Portuguese diaspora here in the United States, right?
Yes.
And so, yeah. And I think if you asked a lot of people, even if they aren't second, third generation, that they're actual immigrants, that those are the things that they care about most. I can't speak to everyone else and whether or not mm-hmm. they follow Portuguese politics. I will say that when we do have dignitaries that come and, you know, they give their speeches and they give their visits and they take their photo ops and things like that. And it always comes up that we need better service. And, you know, and to a large extent, I feel bad for the consul generals across the country, because in many regards, they're the messengers and they're, you know, yep. everyone's shooting the messenger, right?
Yep.
They have limited budgets. They have limited staff. Some do wonderfully as much as they can with the limited resources they have. Some not so much, right? But they're almost set up to fail, frankly, with the resources that were given or that they're given. And I will say, you know, for me, it's like, listen, the Portuguese government doesn't seem to care too much about that part of servicing the diaspora and the community, which is maybe indicative of they don't care if we vote or not, because they probably figure we don't pay attention, we don't care, right? We're only concerned about our little world over here. You know, not that we don't care about what's happening in Portugal, but yes, I think our main priority is how we're being served here. Can we get someone to answer the phone? Can we get someone to answer our questions? Can we get an appointment at the consulate? You know, my father-in-law passed away. This is not me personally, but you know, we've had this recently. My father-in-law passed away. We need to get his body to Portugal. Nobody's answering my call. We need a special document to get his body there. Can you help me? And so, you know, they come to Palcas and we have to go to the embassy and it's this whole emergency thing. And it shouldn't be that way, right? So I think where Portugal views us as being apathetic, we view them as not caring. And, you know, so now we're left to our own devices and to figure out on our own. So, you know, I think we're kind of talking over each other, if you will, when they're arguing one side and we're arguing the other. One thing that I don't think has ever been done is, you know, you have all these people registered with the consulates, right, that technically should be able to vote. Has there ever been a survey done of these, of this group that says, what matters most to you? Do you care about voting in Portugal? What, you know, rank the top things that matter most to you where you would show up and have a voice on certain topics? Without that, I don't know that we're ever going to get anywhere with this conversation because, like I said, you know, Portugal's arguing one thing, we're arguing another. And I think it's like, we're concerned about different things, essentially, is kind of what I'm saying. So I don't know if that adds some color or, you know, to the conversation, but yeah, for me, if somebody was really committed to making a difference about how our community was served here, then yeah, I would make the effort to go vote 100%.
Yeah, let me say this then. First of all, I was under the impression we had an hour, so forgive me for going on.
Oh, that's okay. No problem.
So long about the Portuguese elections, but which is okay because it's timely, right? And I'd be more than happy if you will have me to come back and talk about the U.S. elections. But going back to your point, and you just made a brilliant point, okay? When people say, there's nothing that I need from the Portuguese government, because you know what, Angela? My parents got on a plane and they said, you know what? I can't make a living in Portugal. I'm going to try my luck elsewhere. And we came here and we build lives, right? We build great dynasties. People, there are impressive stories of what we've done here. And we basically say to ourselves, we don't need these folks in Portugal, right? We really don't. We love Portugal, right? But we're not beholden to them for benefits. And so 2 points, right? On the survey, Dennis would probably know better. I am still researching about the council and their role and what they've done. I've seen a lot of communications, but I haven't seen a survey like the one Palkas has done, right? That would be fantastic, right? That's where an entity like the FLAD Foundation could come in and help us with that, right? Maybe we could join forces between Palkas and the Council of the Portuguese Communities, and we could ask for that, right? Instead of just taking a photo op, let's do something constructive, something that's of value, right? And again, this was just totally appalling for me, okay? So in Portugal, when you run for the assembly, the deputies have public financing, right? They just, I just read something on Portuguese media. They have something like a couple million dollars that each party gets based on different criteria, blah, blah, blah. But the point is this, right? They created this structure called the Council of the Portuguese Communities, which is an advisory role. So we basically, we are beholden to the Portuguese government and leaders to ask for our input. I'm starting to change that paradigm. I think that we need to be more proactive and not wait to be asked about certain things. And this is why, okay? I looked at something and I can't remember where I read this, but I'm going to find it. So the budget, right? I started reading the Portuguese budget, which, by the way, if you think the American budget drives you crazy, good luck with the Portuguese budget. But anyway, it's impressive. So I was trying to find out how much funding is available for the Council of the Portuguese Communities. And again, Denise, correct me if I'm wrong, right? The election is March 10th, not the 9th. So thank you. That was a great catch. But here's what I read, and my eyes could be deceiving me. So for Portugal, for the Council of the Communities, I think it was the last year's budget, the Portuguese government allocated 1 million euros.
So that's for the whole communities, like
entire world.
The consular.
The diaspora.
Okay.
Not the consulates, no. The consulates have a different budget under the foreign ministry.
Okay.
But specifically for the Council of the Portuguese Communities. Angela, I didn't
even. What though? What is that $1 million spent on?
Right. So it's murky, right? It's clubs, it's different language programs, but I haven't seen the details, but the ballpark number, right? $1 million divided by the diaspora. What does that turn out to be? Pennies, pennies, right? Mm-hmm. Pennies. And mind you, okay. And this is where I really have taken issue with the Portuguese government, right? I don't know if we'll extend the welcome mat when I get to Lisbon, but that's okay. I'm here to defend our constituents and our citizens here. The government of Angola received $34 million for a very worthwhile project that's associated and related to the 25th of Abril ceremonies. I'm all for it. I have nothing against the folks in Angola. They're great people. Angela, Dennis, Angola is the second largest oil producer in Africa. That's huge. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you look up OPEC, Angola's up there, right? Angola just signed a pact with the major diamond companies in the world to come and develop their mining industry. Angola is rich in natural resources. Why are we sending $34 million to Angola and only sending $1 million to the Council of the Portuguese Communities? There's a great imbalance there. Okay, something is not right. Okay, and again, I'm all for fairness. Maybe there's a great rationale, but again, it goes to your point, Angela, right? Why do we need the Portuguese government when they're not, they don't have, or at least they're not willing to give us more? Well, they're not willing to give us more because, again, we don't have a weapon, right, to bring them to the table and say, hey, look, we need more. And the reason we need more, it's because here are our numbers. Here are our needs based on a survey, right? A survey would be helpful in this. What are we going to do about this? So again, look, I think, and again, technology is what's going to make us a different community. I think we're on the cusp of going from being just, you know, thought of as the immigrants, the poorly educated, right, to being recognized as co-equals the way it should have been from 50 years ago, right? And it's technology that's going to do that, right? Because every day I could sit here, I could watch CNN Portugal now, and I'm on top of what's going on in Portugal. I've been watching the debates, right? I'm able to get online and read the information from the different parties. So it's incumbent upon us to vote. If we vote, I think people will listen. Mm-hmm. And you know what, too? I've been in government for quite a long time, right? The government only listens or tends to listen when they know there's a block of voters that have significant power, that have a say, that, you know, that speak their mind, right? And we could all be respectful, right? We all love Portugal. We all want what's best for our culture. But this imbalance must end, right? I want to participate. I want to exercise all the rights that I get with that constitution, for which a lot of people gave their lives on April 25th, 1974. I don't think that's asking too much.
Well, it was a bloodless revolution, so no one gave their lives. I mean, one guy was shot by the Pete. That's true.
Yeah, there were a few, Dennis. There were a few.
Only one guy was shot by the Pete, but by the secret police. However, I take all your points, and I also enjoy listening to Angela because she has, of course, a different take, and I think that is the take.
Love it.
That we have to listen to all immigrants, first, second, third, anybody who wants to be Portuguese. I know there's a big push for the Portuguese citizenship right now. I was jokingly yesterday, I said I would sell mine if anybody wanted to buy it. But anyway, because I always with my American passport, I'm very Portuguese, but I chose America first now and Portugal second. But anyway, when it comes to the issues that Angela brought up with the survey, my only issue with surveys are sometimes, and we at PALCUS have had that, you know, I'm no longer on the board, but I'm a member of PALCUS and I collaborate and respect PALCUS immensely, as Angela knows. We have issues with people participating, you know, we have good turnout, but it's a minuscule compared to the people we have in the Portuguese American community, and we have to beg people. So sometimes, you know, these things are all what they are. However, a survey that that could be funded, I don't know if Vlad would even do this, but that could be funded to the millions, because that's what it would take to get people on the street, to get people at the Grandes Festas do Espírito Santo in Fall River and the Dia de Portugal in Newark and the Festa, you know, the Portuguese whatever festival in California, and where we could have, you know, a couple of dozen young people with clipboards and actually doing the survey. That that would probably work, but that takes a good, you know, million and a half and 2 million. And just recently, there was a study done by Flat that could have been done that way, and Flat chose not to invest that kind of money. But it would need to be, you know, a couple of million bucks to get a real good take on what the community feels. And I agree totally with Angela, it needs to be done. One aspect that I would like to ask you as a new member of the Conseil des Unidades Portugaises, CCP, would be to really push for something that a few of us in the Portuguese-American communities, and I think you've chimed in on this as well, Frank, have been pushing for, I would say at least 15, if not 20 years. It's a ministry of the diaspora. And what does that mean? It's the ministry of, we are one of the few countries in Europe that has a large diaspora. According to the Portuguese government itself, there are about 4 million of us. So that represents 40% of the population of Portugal that are in the diaspora, if you include immigrants, first and second generation, firstborn and second born. That doesn't even go with third and fourth. That will be way over those 4 million. And so if we do that, if we create a ministry of the diaspora, such as Ireland and such as Armenia and such as other countries has, then it would do that with Angela's concerns and that you stated as well, Frank, which would be to separate the consulates from the diaspora. That is a need. The diplomatic corps should not be involved with the diaspora because we have a diplomat, for example, in Indonesia, not because there's a Portuguese community in Indonesia, because diplomats are there to foster bilateral relations with the country that they are involved in. They're not there to serve the Portuguese community in countries where there is no Portuguese community. And so if we created a ministry of the diaspora with a ministry involves funds, a ministry involves personnel. No ministry in Portugal has less than 100, 150 people working for it. That would be much different than a Secretário de Estado, the Secretary of State, which is adjunct, you know, an assistant to the assistant to the assistant of the Minister of Foreign Affairs. That would give the diaspora, I believe, the structure that it would need in a Portuguese government, whether that government is the PS or the PSD, because those are basically the both ruling parties in Portugal, whether they rule by themselves or with a coalition, whether PS rules with a coalition to the left or the PSD rules with a coalition to the right. Those are the two major political parties that have been running Portugal for the last 50 years almost, as we all know. So I believe a ministry of the diaspora, I wanted to get your take on that, I think we're going to have to do U.S. elections at another time, but a ministry of the diaspora would create that structure, a structure that would be totally dedicated to the diaspora, not related to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, because that's a total different animal.
Dennis, as you were speaking, I'm sitting here and I am thinking of all the people that I see taking out their knives and already starting to dissect this apart, because we are stepping on their turf, if you will. And here's what I'm thinking, right? So right now we have the secretary for the Portuguese communities, which, by the way, I don't want to talk about the individual, and that'll be a conversation for another day. But we do have that entity, right? And you're right, okay? So he's under the foreign ministry. There is the Council of the Portuguese Communities, and then there's already a Portuguese diaspora group that's involved with the Portuguese president, which I tend to call
Conselho da Diaspora. I think Angela's on that board, if I'm not mistaken.
So
yes,
right.
I am. Yep.
Okay. So we already have these entities. So, and as I'm thinking here of looking at the name Ministry of Diaspora, I think the concept is like a bigger umbrella where all of this could fall under. I'd certainly be willing to talk and discuss it in further detail. And I'd like to get other folks, you know, to chime in on that. I think your point is that let's just have an entity in the Portuguese government that's just dedicated to the needs, the wants, the desires, the aspirations.
Yes.
But a minister is a powerful. A minister
too.
Is like a secretary of defense or secretary,
right,
of state. A minister is a cabinet position.
Right.
Okay. And if the diaspora is important to Portugal, because for the mere numbers that it represents 40% of the population, it should be a minister. With a minister comes not just the cabinet role, but it comes obviously a different secretaries of state for different parts of the world instead of just being one. And then it comes with resources that the Portuguese government would have to put into it, because the problem with the Conselho das Comunidades Portuguesas, which I served for almost 6 years, because they never hold elections when they're supposed to. And
don't go there.
And the last one was there for 10 years. You know,
Go there.
It was almost as much as Salazar. And then the next one is the Conselho de Diaspora, which, you know, that Angela sits on. These are advisory boards. It's like sitting on the advisory boards of the Loser American Education Foundation that I sat for many years. And now I'm a board member, but I sat for many years. It was great, but I don't have a vote. And so the idea, and many advisory boards on many boards, as both of you know better than I do, you know, they're great. You know, they feed you some good information that you can either take it or just trash it. In most cases, Portugal just trashes it. And then they don't have a vote. A minister has a vote. A minister has a seat at the table every single week with the prime minister, and the diaspora is represented there. So until we get that through our heads, that a ministry of the diaspora is the only way we will have that representation, I don't think we're going to get anywhere, even if the Secretary of State is a nice guy, and most of them have not been.
I'm newly on the Conselho de Diaspora, so I'm just learning about it. But what I have observed so far is that it's not a council that advises Portugal on here's how you can better serve the diaspora. It is a council to come up with ideas on how can we get the diaspora to invest in Portugal.
Yes.
And give things back to Portugal. So yes. It's the other way, right?
Yep.
We're more concerned about, no. When we're talking about a ministry of the diaspora, how can that department better provide resources and funding for language learning, for textbooks, all those kinds of things that really matter to the people living in the diaspora.
Exactly.
I think that's a key difference to keep in mind, right?
Correct. So, and the others are advisory boards, and they would liberate, and I use that word deliberately, it would liberate the teaching of the Portuguese language away from the Camões Institute, which is the most elitist government entity in Portugal, and has not focused directly on the communities, on the diaspora, because they're involved in other issues, which is, you know, creating, and as they should be, as the Camões Institute should be, like the Cervantes Institute and like the British Council and the Alliance Française, they all should be involved in creating these lectureships at different prestigious universities. But a Ministry of the Diaspora would be in charge of the Portuguese language for those who are of Portuguese background. So it's a total different animal, and it would liberate us from all these other entities that have a lot of other things to do.
Dennis, Angela, here's my commitment to you, right? So PALCAS is in my under my jurisdiction or in my jurisdiction, which I'm very proud to say. So we're close to each other. I hope that we get closer and we're closer on issues such as these where we have something in common, because I think we're stronger united as opposed to being divided, right? That's why I kind of ran on this slogan, Portuguese United, right? Dennis, a white paper, I'd love to have it. At some point, and I was talking to Ambassador Lopes not too long ago, he's going to call all the conselheiros to the embassy for our first meeting, where I'm sure there's going to be an agenda. And if there isn't, I'd rather go to a meeting with an agenda. I would love to bring up some of these points. You know, and if I have a group like PALCAS that's behind me, that's willing to, you know, to be an advocate for these positions, I think that's the way to go, right? So it's me and there's six other conselheiros. Let's bring them into the fold too, if you will. Let's invite them. Let's get their thoughts. Let's get their opinion. And if we walk out of here and walk into Lisbon, okay, as a solid team, That's my desire, right? I've reached out already to the newly elected members and even to the previous members of the Conselho, and I've made my contacts available, right? That's all I could say. And I said, hey, love to hear from you. Let's talk. Let's build bridges. I think we need, you know, new blood. I think we need the cultural and historic knowledge that a person like you, Denise, brings to this conversation. You have that history. You know what has worked in the past, what hasn't worked in the past. Do me a favor. Help us newbies be better educated. I could only be the strong advocate that I want to be as long as I know what the issues are. So far, right, when I ran for this position, nobody asked me to take a position on any issue. And so that's why I like the idea of a survey. I try to do something. It wasn't that fancy, but I put something out online. And you're right, the feedback is very, very small, right? But at least we asked, right? Mm-hmm. I asked the Portuguese organizations. I made myself available for Zoom meetings to have listening sessions. I would like, once this is in place, once we go to Portugal, get sworn in, come back, know what the agenda might be. That's what I'm committed to doing, right? Especially, I'll tell you right now, this is what I'm going to do in the Washington consular area, is I am looking forward to having a monthly meeting. Anyone's welcome that's in this area. I want to engage the organizations. I want to engage the leadership. My number's out there. I'm online, as you guys know. My contacts are out there. I want to hear from our community, right? I want to go to Lisbon with a community agenda, not a Frank Ferreira agenda. I do know what I want to put on that agenda, like electoral reforms is definitely there. But, you know, there are other issues, right? And I want to know what those issues are. I don't want to be the one, you know, coming up with the issues. That's not the way I want this to work. So I'm here. And Denise, I think you welcome this concept too. I've been very proactive where I'm already entertaining requests for my constituents, and I'm working the system on their behalf because, you know what? That's the background. That's where I come from, right? That's what public service to me means. This position of counselor is just not an advisory, a passive role. I want it to be an active and engaging role, right? I want us to be proactive, not to be spectators. I think we've had enough of that for a very long time. And again, I'm really, really betting on technology. Look at us. The three of us are talking today because of technology. CNN Portugal, right? We have CNN here in the United States. I want that person to be reporting back to Portugal what our needs are, what our strengths are, right? Let's engage these folks. So I'm here. I thank you immensely for the time that you've given me today. We've always been friends. We're very, we're type A individuals. I know that. I'm going to try to be a better person and listen some more than talking. But today I had to get these points across. So you had to hear me. So thank you.
Yes. And thank you for your time today, Frank. We are at time, so we are going to wrap this up. Though yep. I know we could go for hours and hours and perhaps this merits some follow-up conversations. And I will say, anyone out there listening, if this conversation maybe got your blood boiling and you have some things to say, reach out to us, send us a note, palkus@palkus.org. Let us know your thoughts. Do you want to be a guest on the show? You know, this is a platform to give voice to the community. And so that's why we're here. So thank you, Frank. Thank you, Denise. Thanks to our listeners. And we hope that you have subscribed to our podcast channel so that you can continue to hear these kinds of conversations, share the conversations with your family and friends, so that we generate more awareness of these issues that are so important to us and to our community. And with that, we'll say until next time, Teja.
Thank you all.
Adios.
Thank you for listening to Politicus, the official podcast of PALKUS, the Portuguese American Leadership Council of the United States. PALKUS is the premier national organization representing the interests of the Portuguese American community at large. To learn more about PALKUS and how to become a member or to make a donation, visit www.palkus.org. To submit feedback or suggestions about the podcast, email us at palkus@palkus.org. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of the show are not endorsed by PALKUS.